Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Gary Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this Monday edition of Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth here with you alongside Adam Vingen, our good friend from The Athletic. Adam, how are we doing tonight?
Ryan, always a pleasure to be with you here on Predators Insiders.
Always a pleasure to have you. And before we go any further, I do want to say congratulations on the front end. You are getting married this upcoming weekend.
Yep, this Saturday.
This Saturday, so congratulations.
Thank you.
I didn't want to forget it later on in the show and just wanted to get it out of the way.
Right, because people did not come to listen to this show to hear about the details of my wedding. It's going to be a beautiful day. Actually, it's supposed to rain Charleston, South Carolina on Saturday, but I hear that it's good luck if it rains on your wedding day.
I believe
that's one of those old sayings, so I hope it's true. It doesn't bother me as much. My fiance slash wife-to-be probably won't love it, but we'll make the best of it. It's going to be a wonderful occasion, so thank you for your kind wishes.
Well, I've heard the Nashville Predators have been giving you some advice as well.
They have. I have been plying the married players on the team for marriage and wedding day advice, considering I spend more time around them than my own friends and family. And I'm hoping to have a good story, a funny story out of it for Wednesday on The Athletic. I was expecting to be razzed a bit, just because we know how NHL players like to bust each other's chops, but there is a room full of romantics in that Predators dressing room, I learned by asking some of these questions.
So. I can't wait to read that story, because I would give you a marriage advice, but I'm not getting married until next June. So
I'll be giving you advice.
Yes, you will.
Yes.
The next time that you're on Preds Insiders, you will be giving me marriage advice.
I will do the best
I can. Or maybe wedding day advice.
Yes.
That's neither here nor there. No. Saturday night, the Nashville Predators got back in the win column, a 6-4 win over the New Jersey Devils. Four different times in that game, the Predators held a 2-goal lead, and Rocco Grimaldi sealed the deal midway through the third period to make it 6-4, and the Preds get a much-needed win against a team they were far superior than, and I thought the third line, we're going to get into the third line here shortly about Grimaldi, Bonino, and Smith. That line was definitely a factor. It was good to see Philip Forsberg get back in the goal column. But Daniel Carr, Jakob Trenin scoring their first NHL goals, that was cool to see as well.
It was. And the first observation I'd like to make about Saturday's game is that the New Jersey Devils, easy for me to say, are pretty darn bad. That is not a good hockey team, and obviously their record reflects that. That being said, when it was 2-0 Predators at 2:13, thanks to goals from Daniel Carr and Dante Fabbro, it seemed that the Predators were going to be in for perhaps an easy night or an easier night, but then, what, 3 minutes later, less than 3 minutes later, it was tied at 2.
Mm-hmm.
Four goals in the first 3 minutes, 59 seconds of the game.
If anyone was late to the game, they missed a lot.
They did miss a lot.
In those first 5-10 minutes.
And the Predators did a good job of keeping the Devils at bay for the most part throughout the game. Of course, the Devils tied the game at 2, but it was 4-2, then 4-3, then 5-3, then 5-4, then the ultimate, was it 6-4 or 5-4, the final?
6-4.
6-4. See, there were too many goals. I can't even remember. but it was an interesting game. It's important that the Predators won a Saturday home game, which they had not done yet this year. They were 0-3-1 in their first four Saturday home games, so it took until December 7th for them to win a Saturday home game, but they did. And we've talked about their struggles at home in general, but particularly on Saturdays, which used to be an almost guaranteed victory for the Predators with the way that they played and the way that the crowd reacted throughout the game. But you know, I think when you look at where this team is, that was an important win just because it was a win, period. You know, the schedule does not get any easier. I mean, it doesn't get much easier than the New Jersey Devils, but you know, they've got San Jose tomorrow, and San Jose in a similar place as the Predators.
San Jose has 32 points in 32 games. The Preds have 31 points in 28 games. I mean, that's a pretty big early season contest between two teams that have underachieved so far this season and are trying to get back in the playoff mix.
Working to the Predators' advantage is that I think they've played the fewest games of any team in the Western Conference.
That is true.
So if we're going by points percentage, they're in the playoffs. But of course, that's not what ultimately determines who gets in and who doesn't. But the Sharks just lost in back-to-back games in Florida. They lost 7-1 to the Tampa Bay Lightning on Saturday and then lost again, not sure of the score, not in front of me, to the Florida Panthers yesterday. So they're not in a great way either. And this is a good opportunity for the Predators to gain ground on the team that they're chasing, and they have three games in hand on the Sharks. So this is a really big opportunity for the Predators, but then they play the Sabres. They've got
Dallas
at home on Saturday, the first game against the Stars since the playoff series. They've got the New York teams back-to-back next Monday and Tuesday, Ottawa. They've got Boston on the road in a couple of weeks. They've got Arizona at home right before Christmas. So this is there are some tough games in this stretch, and and the Sharks are in a bad way right now. So if the Predators can take advantage of that and win tomorrow, you know, their situation does not seem as dire as it might have been.
The Sharks lost 5-1 yesterday.
So they lost 12-2 combined over the weekend to the Lightning and Panthers.
Their trip to Florida was not kind to them.
No. The weather might have been nice, but the games were not.
Correct. So the Preds win 6-4 Saturday night. P.K. Subban, in his return, I thought looked pretty bad.
I would agree.
There were a handful of games last season where we kind of scratched our heads over P.K. Subban. We kind of wondered, what is P.K. Subban at this stage in his career? Is he still the elite Norris Trophy contender, or is he taking a step back in his game? And all reports out of Newark this season have been he is not the same defenseman that they thought they were trading for back in the summer, and it was certainly on display Saturday night.
Yeah, he did not look great. Of course, the one play that everybody will probably recall is the play that Rocco Grimaldi made in the third period to chip the puck past PK at the point and then burn him for a breakaway goal. Now, PK Subban is a player who prides himself on his skating ability, and in his prime, there were a few defensemen or players in the league in general that had his edge work, his speed on the ice. He looked broken down on that particular play, and his ice time was reflective of that. He played 18 minutes 20 seconds of ice time.
That's crazy.
On Saturday, and I saw that after the game, and I had to do a double take. I thought I was looking at the wrong column, but I believe that is his lowest amount of ice time in a game this season. He also doesn't play on the power play as much anymore. I believe he's been moved off of both power play units. He's like a secondary option on the power play now, which is hard to believe because Predators fans know that for 3 years he was basically a fixture on the power play here sometimes to the detriment of the team for his desire to just take slap shots from long distances.
That ice time number that you just referenced is more than 4 minutes less than his average ice time this season.
Mm.
He's averaging close to 23 minutes per night, but in his last 17 games, PK Subban, no points at a minus 13 plus minus rating. I know plus minus is more of an older statistic that people went off of. Now we have all these advanced analytics that have pushed plus minus to the side, but minus 13 in 17 games is not good.
It's not. And granted, he plays for a bad team. Mm-hmm. So everybody on that team suffers because of that in terms of how they look. But you know, you could tell just based on the eye test over PK Subban's 3 years in Nashville that by the time last season ended, he certainly wasn't on top of his game. But it appears that the drop-off in his game with the New Jersey Devils this season from last year with the Predators has been precipitous, like significantly worse. And that's not great for them because they traded for him hoping that he would help them get back into a playoff spot. Of course, they drafted Jack Hughes. They signed Wayne Simmonds.
who also did not look good.
Who also did not look good, but also he didn't look good in his brief tenure with the Predators either.
Both Simmons and Subban look like they're skating in a quicksand.
Well, with Wayne Simmons, you knew when the Predators traded for him last year that you weren't getting the Wayne Simmons that was perhaps the premier power forward in the NHL in the prime of his career. The way he plays the game, he's going to break down quicker than most players his age. And I think you saw that in the brief time he was here last year. And I barely noticed he was on the ice on Saturday, which is how I felt about him when he was here. I know he was hurt as well, but you know, the Devils, for a team that many picked to be that sexy, you know, underdog playoff team, they're doing everything they can not to make the playoffs. They're pretty much out of it already.
I mean, they've already fired the coach and they're about to trade their best player.
That is true. And we'll talk about that later as well.
We will. That's all coming up next. But first, that third line of Grimaldi, Bonino, and Smith. How sustainable is this success from that trio moving forward? We'll get into that next. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app.
Now coming out in front, the shot and the score. What a beautiful play there. Nick Bonino puts it away upstairs.
Trying to clear that one out was Smith. That was blocked. Long clear.
Poked out. Now here's Grimaldi with a breakaway. Rocco Grimaldi moving in. He scores! Rocco Grimaldi!
You're right. We've tried to keep some glue on that line because they've been a productive line, not only from a standpoint of offense and creating goals and scoring goals and making plays, but they get the pucks out of the defensive zone. They get them through the neutral zone. They stay in the offensive zone. They generate good numbers. So for me, it's you know, an opportunity for them just to continue to grow and get some continuity together. But I think they've been a real solid line offensively.
That was Peter Laviolette Saturday night after the 6-4 win for the Preds over the New Jersey Devils, talking about the line featuring Rocco Grimaldi, Nick Bonino, and Craig Smith. And Adam, they were on the ice for four goals, if you want to add or count the Grimaldi goal or assist for Jakob Trenin's first NHL goal. But Bonino and Smith assisted on Dante Fabro's goal in the first period, and then Bonino and Grimaldi each scored in the third period. And that line has become a staple and a lineup that has been in flux a lot over this last month, ever since Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchene each suffered injuries. The line combinations have been juggled many nights, but Grimaldi, Bonino, and Smith, that trio has been very effective together. And that was on full display Saturday night.
Perhaps my favorite stat actually of the game from Saturday is that Rocco Grimaldi was on the ice for 7 minutes, 28 seconds at 5-on-5. And in that 7 minutes, 28 seconds, the Predators outscored the Devils 4-0. Talk about making the most of your opportunities.
No kidding.
But that line of Rocco Grimaldi, Nick Bonino, and Craig Smith, if you want to talk fancy stats, according to the website moneypuck.com, that line's expected goal percentage is 70.5% this season, which is a reflection of the quality of chances that they're allowing and creating. That means that according to Money Puck's data, that line should control 70.5% of the goals when they're on the ice. And that 70.5% is the highest in the league among forward lines. So they are really doing a great job of creating opportunities for themselves. Rocco Grimaldi, a goal and an assist the other night. He already has a career high. He had 13 points last year in his, I guess you can call it his breakout season, which earned him a $1 million award in arbitration. He already has 14 points this year. And Nick Bonino, I know I'm not alone in saying this, he's making me eat a ton of crow because pretty much all offseason, I'll admit, I said that Nick Bonino's season last year where he had 17 goals and 35 points was smoke and mirrors because he rode the PDO train to that particular total, meaning that he was the beneficiary of some great luck on both ends of the ice. But you look at the goals he scores. I mean, the goal he scored on Saturday was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
But most of the goals he scores are not beautiful. They're rebounds. They're battling in front of the net. They're deflections. Those are the kinds of goals that the Predators need to score more of, and he's doing a great job of that. Now, Craig Smith has not had a great year statistically. He has 2 goals in 28 games, but he is doing what you're used to seeing him do, and that's creating opportunities. As I look at it right now, he has 10.92, he's averaging 10.92 shots per 60 minutes at 5-on-5, which is 10th in the NHL among forwards with at least 200 minutes of ice time. And there have been 344 forwards that have played at least 200 minutes of ice time before tonight's games. So Craig Smith is still doing what he needs to do to get pucks on net. He hasn't scored yet. His shooting percentage is very low. You hope that he is able to boost that, the luck turns in his favor. But altogether, that line has done a really great job on in terms of creating offense and doing what it takes to get those high-quality chances. The flip side, of course, in talking about those three, is that there are players who are expected to score more often who aren't.
And I want to get to that in a minute.
Okay.
But to shed more light on how impressive what Nick Bonino is doing, he has 11 goals in 28 games. He's on pace for 32. I don't think he gets to 30.
No, he's not going to get to 30.
I think he does get to 20.
Yes,
this season.
I think so.
He would have to go in a pretty long slump for him to not get to 20. But he's doing this with his offensive zone start percentage at 34%.
Yeah, and I don't have Craig Smith's in front of me, his offensive zone start percentage, but considering where Nick Bonino is, Craig Smith's is probably under 50%.
51.4.
Okay, so just a hair above 50%. Craig Smith typically is in like the 60s and 70s. You know, when he and Kyle Turris and Kevin Fiala were a line a couple of years ago, they were starting almost exclusively in the offensive zone. So this is different for Craig to start most of his, you know, he's still starting the more than half of his shifts in the offensive zone, as you say, but it's a significant drop off from what we're used to. Nick Bonino is shooting in all situations. He has a 20.4 shooting percentage. His career average is 12.2. So that's going to dip. So he's not going to keep scoring at this rate, but 20 goals is I think, a probability. I think he will score at least 20, but he's not pushing 30.
Grimaldi on pace for 44 points.
That would be a solid year for him. I mean, honestly, entering this season, I thought a solid year from Rocco, since he had 13 points last year, would be 25, 30.
I was going to say 25 or, you know, 20 to 30, somewhere in that range.
But, yeah, if he can get to 30 this year, I think it's a really, I mean, a $1 million player scoring 30 points. That's good. You can't argue with that.
So that line is certainly excelling, Grimaldi, Bonino, and Smith. But like you said, Adam, there are players on this roster that you expect a lot more out of. Mikael Granlund is someone who has missed the last handful of games. He practiced earlier today, and he told you, Adam, that he does expect to play at some point later this week. Is that correct?
Yes. He said that the injury that he's dealing with first originated during the game at Florida, and I believe he may have tweaked it during a recent practice, which led to his removal from the lineup. But he said it's not serious, and I asked if he thinks he could play this week, and he said, yeah, for sure.
So Mikael Granlund has only missed the last 2 games. He has 11 points in 26 games this season. And really, you expect more out of, you know, Philip Forsberg has been good, but I don't think he's consistently been really good like he was right before the injury that he suffered in Vegas early in the season. Ryan Johansson, I don't think, has been consistently very good. We discussed last time you were on how Ryan Johansson really elevated his game in that home-and-home against the St. Louis Blues, but overall, Ryan Johansson this season has not looked the same at 5-on-5, even though the Preds are number one in the league in terms of 5-on-5 goals per game.
Yeah, I think Ryan Johansson is a really interesting case this season. As you mentioned, the last time we were together on this show, we were talking about Ryan for the first time really showing his style of play in terms of how good he can look when he's on his game. But overall, it's been a pretty underwhelming season from him. He hasn't really stood out too much. And there have been other things happening around him that perhaps the attention has not been on him, but we are getting to a point where you may need to start to wonder about Ryan Johansson in terms of where is that next gear?
Mm-hmm.
Because I still think he hasn't hit it yet, and we're almost to Christmas. So, Matt Duchene's another player. I mean, Matt Duchene, points-wise, is having a good year, and he started off amazingly, as we both recall and as the listeners recall. But it's been really quiet lately on the score sheet. And he's driving offense, but he's not producing goals and assists.
Which, Matt Duchene has 11 points in his last 22 games.
Yeah, after having like 11 points in his first like five or six games. It felt like that or something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
Phillip, 9 points in his first five.
Philip Forsberg, you know, it was good to see him score the other night. You know, he's been, I feel like, I mean, he was doing everything he could to take over that game the other night. He had so many pretty plays that weren't, he or the recipient weren't able to finish. I think of the play he made driving to the net and feeding the puck to Josi for the one who had a wide open net, but the puck kind of rolled on him and he wasn't able to get all of it and he missed wide. But, you know, Forsberg was doing everything he could to take over that game. So I think it's there for Phillip, but it just, he just hasn't translated as it did at the beginning of the season. And, you know, when you look at the best players on this team so far this season, I think you could say, you know, that it's Roman Josi and Ryan Ellis. I think Roman, as a pair and individually, have been outstanding, which is good. But there are a lot of players who are expected to be the main contributors to this team that aren't doing so. And we will talk about one of them later in the show. And I'm not going to spoil it because I want people to keep listening. But that's sort of the catch-22 of talking about how great the Grimaldi-Bonino-Smith line has been. It's great if they're doing that and they're complementing the top two lines who are also playing well. It's another thing when they're almost carrying the offense right now, it feels like, when there are other players who need to be doing so.
Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl are both over 50 points.
That's insane.
Of the Edmonton Oilers.
That's insane.
Roman Josi leads the team with 25, and then Duchene and Ellis have 20. Those are the only three players with 20 or more points. In your mind, who would be the first one to get to 50?
Of those players?
Of anybody on the Preds roster.
So who are the ones that have 20 again?
Ellis and Duchene have 20. Josi has 25, and then just shy of 20, Philip Forsberg has 19, Yarncroke 19 as well.
It's going to be Roman. I mean, Roman has had a fantastic season. I mean, I'm going to be shocked at this point. I know it's not even Christmas yet, but if he continues to play like this, I'm going to be shocked if he's not a Norris Trophy finalist.
I would 100% agree.
As of at this moment, the Norris Trophy is being readied for John Carlson, who's just playing fantastic hockey for the Washington Capitals. But, you know, Roman on both ends of the ice has just been dynamic. I feel like his game has picked up since he signed his contract extension. I don't have stats in front of me to back that up. It just feels that way. He's having a great start to the season anyway. Feels like he hit another level since then.
We'll look at those stats during the break. But coming up next, Peter Laviolette made a statement Friday about some accusations thrown his way. We'll get to that next and get Adam's opinion on it. On Preds Insiders, I'm Ryan Porth. He's Adam Vingan of The Athletic. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game National app. Welcome back into the show. That's right, Preds Insiders, brought to you every Monday and Wednesday by Cool Springs Laser Dentistry. For all your dental needs, visit KellyERice.com. Nashville's number one Ford dealer, Wyatt Johnson Ford, Kerry Zier, Remax Elite, and Geno's East on the corner of 3rd Avenue and Korean Veterans Boulevard downtown. Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic. Tomorrow night, the Preds host the San Jose Sharks. Pre-game at 6, puck drop at 7 on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And there are great tickets still available at Ticketmaster.com for this game against the Sharks. Be one of the first 8,000 people there to receive a 2020 Bridgestone NHL Winter Classic Roman Josi bobblehead. Those things are pretty cool.
8,000?
First 8,000 people.
It seems like an arbitrary number. Usually it's like 10,000 or 5,000, but 8,000.
I'd like to see how many bobbleheads we can make of Adam Vingan.
You don't want to see that.
No?
Because bobbleheads typically look nothing like the people that they're fashioned after. They often look uglier than the people they're fashioned after. And since I'm no Prince Charming already, I'd rather not see what I look like in bobblehead form. I might look like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, which I was just recently watching on Disney Plus. I've been going through the Disney classics since I ordered Disney Plus.
We looked up the numbers on Roman Josi.
Yes.
You had maybe a little bit of a thought or theory that Roman Josi had been playing better since he signed his contract extension in late October. And Roman Josi had 13 points in his first 11 games before the contract. And since then, he has 11 points in 17 games.
Okay. So the output hasn't been there as much, but I still feel that Roman is playing very well. I believe he's clearly this team's MVP so far this season.
There's no question.
No, he's been great, and you know, he is looking like he should be the third highest paid defenseman in the NHL, which he will be starting next year.
So Friday after practice, I think we were a little thrown off when Peter Laviolette came out of his coach's room and made a statement. And the statement was in reaction to comments that Daniel Carcillo made on another local radio show here in Nashville about how Peter Laviolette tried in Philadelphia to maybe convince players to go out and fight.
Bully players
yeah. to go fight. And then also, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN.com spoke with Ville Leino, who was the, I guess you could say, victim, for lack of a better word, of a punch from Peter Laviolette on the bench in Carolina in a game. When was that?
February 2011.
So
it was a game against the Hurricanes when they were with the Flyers.
So 8.5 years ago, where it was a video that went viral in Philadelphia, and I honestly had never seen that video before Friday.
I had, and hadn't thought twice about it, really, until early last week. It came up, and I went back and watched it, and I still felt that it didn't rise to the level of some of the other things that we've been hearing with coaches lately, but I figured that it was something that was going to come up because it happened. And the point of Greg's column was, you know, in a time where we're talking about hockey culture and, you know, the physical and verbal and mental abuse, the accusations that are being made against coaches, and in the case of Bill Peters, enough, you know, confirmed to the point that he resigned as coach of the Calgary Flames. You know, this is probably the most viral moment caught on camera of a coach striking a player, intentional or not. So why haven't we brought this up? I don't think Greg was trying to, you know, drum up something out of nothing, but he felt the need to reach out to Ville Leino, and Leino, to his credit, sort of dismissed it as well, saying it looked worse than it actually was. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, you did a lot of reporting Friday following that statement from Peter Laviolette. Peter Laviolette came out and denied the bullying comments from Daniel Carcillo. He said the punch to Leno's head was accidental, that he was trying to drive his fist into his hand, and he missed his hand and hit Leno's head. And the video does not look great when you think of it in the terms of the recent state of coaching in the National Hockey League. But I do believe Peter Laviolette at his word, saying that it was a mistake and that they've even laughed about it since then, knowing that it was a mistake and the fact that it did go viral.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, I wrote a lengthy story about it on Friday at The Athletic. I wasn't intending to write about it, but the fact that Peter Laviolette felt the need to come out and say something, you know, led me to write an article, because if he felt it was important enough.
And the statement was over 2.5 minutes long.
It was long, and he did take questions. He said that he wasn't going to talk about it after that, but he was willing to take questions, and he did. And you know, I spoke to Daniel Carcillo on the phone on Friday, who, because I wanted to get his response to Laviolette's response. And Carcillo said to me that he believes Laviolette misrepresented what he said. And either way, you know, he also made sure to point out, and I'm sure people have done this looking at that clip, like it was the Zapruder film, is that Laviolette's hand doesn't leave his side when he makes the punch, when he delivers the punch, for lack of a better word. But I spoke to two players for the Philadelphia Flyers who were on that team and in that game. Of course, Scott Hartnell, as we know, perhaps the person, or the player rather, who knows Peter Laviolette better than anybody, and Daniel Briere. And both of them said that they did not see any malicious intent into what Peter was doing, nor did they remember ever seeing Peter physically or verbally abuse or assault players while they were under his watch. I have the quote here from Daniel Briere to me. I asked him what he remembered about that particular incident with Leino. He said, quote, "I didn't even see it live. I had no idea. I remember seeing it later that night, I think on the clip on social media. To be honest, it's been so long. from what I remember, I thought he was kind of yelling at the whole team and kind of hit Leno by accident. I never felt there was any intent to try to hurt him or that it was directed at Ville. The whole time that I played for Peter, I never saw him, and I don't remember seeing him ever attack physically or verbally someone directly. To me, that was very out of the ordinary, so that's why I never thought twice about it, end quote. And frankly, I hadn't thought twice about it myself, but understandably, with how things are going for coaches right now, better safe than sorry getting out in front of something like this.
And you also said that Scott Hartnell told you that Peter Laviolette never coerced him. Blah. Said that Peter Laviolette never coerced him to go fight, and he fought many times with the Flyers, and Austin Watson said the same thing.
Right. Yes, Scott Hartnell said, quote, I never felt at all pressured by Laviolette or any coach, be that John Tortorella, John Stevens, Barry Trotz. I never heard Peter Laviolette say to anyone of Jody Shelley, Riley Cote, anybody like that when we were playing for Philly, to go out there and make things happen to change the swing of the game. I would say that's false, referring to Daniel Carcillo's assertion slash allegation. So it appears that I don't want to say that this was overblown, because it is an important topic. I mean, the allegations that have come out against Mike Babcock, the entire saga that led to Bill Peters having to resign from his job as coach of the Calgary Flames, these are serious things. And as we're recording this on Monday, you know, the NHL Board of Governors is meeting today, and that's going to be the topic of conversation, is how they prevent things like this from happening again throughout the league. So Peter Laviolette and the Predators were smart to see that these were things that were being said, to come out and address them head on. I'm not sure there's much more to it than what we heard and what I reported. So, you know, I commend the Predators and Peter Laviolette from doing this, because some other coaches may have refused to say anything, which opens the door for speculation. Peter Laviolette felt it important to be out in front of it, and I think that was the right decision.
Well, and such a slippery slope for coaches now. And you wonder if what we've seen, like you said, with Babcock or with Peters or even with Mark Crawford, now an assistant with the Chicago Blackhawks, where is this going to end? Where is this going to stop? I don't know. I mean, there could be another story come out in the next couple weeks. I have no idea, but about a coach that we're not expecting, and it's a Bill Peters situation all over again.
Yeah, and Akeem Alou, who is the player who first brought the allegations about Bill Peters to light, which were ultimately corroborated by his teammates, and as I mentioned, enough for the Flames to decide that they couldn't employ him as their coach anymore. I mean, he has met with the league in a way to make the game more inclusive and to avoid these things happening again. Now, it's interesting, because if you talk to former players or older players, say Chris Mason and Hal Gill, you know, these are tactics that were used against older players, players whose careers started much earlier. And perhaps nothing was thought of it then, but this is a different generation of players who perhaps need to be bit, I don't want to say the word coddled, but there needs to be a lot more positive reinforcement than perhaps there used to be in the NHL and in coaching in general.
It's just a different generation of life.
Yes.
Like, there are things that people said behind closed doors or in public 20, 30 years ago that you can't even come close to getting away with.
No, absolutely not.
In today's day and age. And a lot of what was said or done by Bill Peters back then absolutely is uncalled for. It was back then, and certainly is now.
And even and we say back then, it was what, 10 years ago?
Right.
I mean, it wasn't acceptable 10 years ago, but you're right. I mean, there are certain things that were excused at a certain point in the past that are no longer excusable. And we're seeing a reckoning right now.
Coming up next, we'll get to some goaltending stats with the Nashville Predators. That's coming up next. Plus, there are trade rumors swirling around a player the Preds just played. Is that player a fit in Nashville? We'll get to that as well. He's Adam Vingan. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Welcome back into Preds Insiders. Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan of The Athletic on this Monday evening. Hope everyone had a great weekend. Tomorrow night, the Preds host the San Jose Sharks. Pregame at 6, puck drop at 7. All the action heard on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Adam, there have been a lot of different things that fans have been concerned about in the first couple months of the season. There weren't many of them in the first 10 to 15 games, but ever since Halloween, this team, they went through their slump. They lost six in a row. They lost 8 of 9. And ever since they won back-to-back games against the St. Louis Blues, just feels like they've been treading water.
Yes.
A little bit over that time. Even though they are, what, 4-1-2 in that time?
That sounds right.
It still hasn't been fantastic hockey that we saw in the first, for much of the first month of the season. And there are some underlying numbers. The bigger sample size that we get for this team that suggest maybe it's not the defense. Maybe the defense is actually playing okay, but the goaltending behind that defense is struggling a little bit. If you want to enlighten the audience,
I'll try
on fancy stats.
I'll do my best. And as I walked into the studio to sit with you, I said, should we be worried about Pecorine? And
I said, I'm not there yet.
I said, I'm getting there because I'm closer than you are. Because since October 31st, Halloween, which was, of course, the game where the Predators had a 4-1 lead entering the third period and lost 6-5 in overtime to the Calgary Flames. So on Natural Stat Trick, there are 47 goaltenders, 47, who have played at least 300 minutes since Halloween. Pecorine's save percentage in those games, at 5-on-5, 890. That's 45th out of 47 goalies. His goals against average at 5-on-5, 3.21, also 45th out of 47 goalies. His goals saved above average since October 31st, minus 5.23, 43rd out of 47 goalies. UC Saros, not much better. His save percentage over that time is 40th out of 47. His goals against average is 36th out of 47. So if you're looking for a reason, there are multiple, but if you're looking for a main reason as to why this team has struggled, you have to point the finger at goaltending. And to give you a sense of that, looking back at that same span of time, October 31st, as a team, the Predators' goals against per 60 minutes is 2.96, which is 26th in the league. 2.96. Their expected goals against per 60 minutes is 1.96, which is third best in the league. That discrepancy speaks to one thing: goaltending. The Predators have done a very good job, according to those expected goal numbers, of limiting the quality of chances that they are giving up. The goalies have not been making the saves. Now, it's easy to blame a goalie, but when you look at those numbers, it's really hard not to, if you're looking to place blame for the Predators treading water or losing grip on a playoff spot, it's hard not to place blame in the crease because that's where it seems to be.
I would love to know how much of those numbers not being anywhere close to what we expect out of someone like Pecorine are because of the three or four clunkers that he's had.
Oh, I'm like, definitely there are some outliers. There are definitely some outliers in there. But when you look at these numbers, It is hard, as I mentioned, not to, blame the goaltending. When you have that game against Colorado, that's going to screw up everybody's numbers.
Yeah, and, but, he had the game against Vancouver as well, where he got pulled after two periods of play. He had a poor third period against the Calgary Flames back on Halloween night. I mean, when you look at his last seven appearances, he's given up three or more goals in six of them. And the one that he did not give up three or more goals was the Carolina game in which he recorded the shutout after he had over a week off.
Yes. And that was a great game for Pekka, that game in Carolina. That was not a game that the Predators had business winning when you look at those fancy stats.
And I also thought he played well against Tampa Bay.
He did.
Tuesday night. There were many moments in that game where it looked like Tampa Bay was on the verge of taking the lead, especially late on the penalty kill. And Pecorine closed the door on many of Tampa Bay's best chances in that game. But overall, you look at the stretch of play for about a month now, I think there is reason for some concern. And I might be a smidge more concerned than when you first asked me that question, just based off the numbers you're reeling off.
It would be easier to place the blame on the team in front of him if those expected goal numbers were in line. But the fact that there's such a discrepancy between the expected goals against and the actual goals against, just to refresh, third best since October 31st in expected goals per 63rd, 26th in actual goals against. There, when you look at that discrepancy, 23 spots between where they should be and where they actually are, according to Natural Stat Trick, it's hard not to look squarely at Pecorine and UC Soros.
One other thing that I want to get to before we bring up Taylor Hall is the power play, 3 for the last 41, about 7%. That's not good at all after a hot start for that power play unit.
I think people are numb to the power play after last year.
Are they, though?
Or are they just angrier? I don't know. I was thinking about that the other night. That's why the goal, for multiple reasons, the goal that Kyle Turr scored against the Tampa Bay Lightning was a big goal. More for him personally than the team in general. But think about how many times last season the Predators scored a big power play goal like that. They didn't. Mm-hmm. Very, very rarely. So that was good. But the power play is starting to... I don't have the numbers in front of me. It might be worth looking into. I still feel that the power play continues to be more dangerous than it was at any point last year in terms of the chances it's creating. But it's starting to look a lot like last year, where it's a lot of that Simpsons gif that I like to tweet out of this, the team passing the soccer ball back and forth, you know, very, you know, nonchalantly. I mean, the Predators haven't really been as active on the power play as they were at the start of the season.
Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, Ryan Porth alongside Adam Vingan. Slapshot Radio coming up at the top of the hour. Before we get out of here, the Preds just played New Jersey. They won 6-4 Saturday night. Taylor Hall scored in that game. And I think there are a lot of Preds fans asking, should the Preds go after Taylor Hall? Will they go after Taylor Hall? And we rarely see Nashville listed as one of the prime contenders to acquire Taylor Hall, who is a free agent at the end of this season. We see teams like Colorado, St. Louis, Dallas, all in the division, perhaps Edmonton, and a few others listed as prime candidates to acquire Taylor Hall. But we were discussing at practice Friday, Adam, that we don't think the Preds are a good match for what New Jersey's looking for or what the Preds could do in terms of keeping Taylor Hall beyond this season.
Do you think they'd take back Steven Santini?
As part of a large package?
Yes. They seem to like, the Predators really like Jeremy Davies, so, who is, of course, with Santini in the trade with P.K. Subban. But if they'd like to have Steven Santini back, maybe
sure,
that's the defenseman that they're looking for.
Steven Santini's grow on trees.
Yes. But anyway, it's hard to see a fit between the Predators and Taylor Hall. Now, of course, there have been multiple trades between the Devils and the Predators since Ray Shero became the GM in New Jersey. There's the P.K. Subban trade. There's the Brian Boyle trade. There's P.A. Parenteau. There's Vernon Fiddler. But when you look at the makeup of the Predators, you look at Taylor Hall, who I believe is 28 years old. He's perhaps looking for a contract at least worth $10 million. Think about the number of players on this team, the number of forwards specifically, who are at 30 years old, rather nearing and close to are the same thing, nearing or at 30 years old, who are signed to long-term contracts with big cap hits. Ryan Johansson, who's 27. Matt Duchene, who's 28. Kyle Turris, who's 30. You know, Colton Sissons, who's 26. Then you go to the defense, Roman Josi, who's 28. Ryan Ellis, who's 28. Roman, who's 29. You also have to remember that there are contracts needed for Philip Forsberg in a couple of years and Matthias Ekholm. From a money standpoint, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, as well as it doesn't make a lot of sense from a team standpoint. I mean, this team is clearly in its win-now window, and it's going to close sooner rather than later, which may be the argument for, you know, taking a swing at Taylor Hall. But the likelihood of them being able to re-sign him and having so much money and term tied up in players who are now exiting their primes, that doesn't seem like a winning proposition to me.
I would agree.
All right, guys, thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for listening. It seemed like a fit for a lot of the top forwards last season, like Artemi Panarin or Matt Duchene or whomever else was out there in the rumor mill, Mark Stone, it just doesn't seem like it's a match made in heaven with Taylor Hall. I do think, though, if he ends up in the Central Division, it's going to make it that much tougher for the Preds to go on a playoff run this spring.
Chris Johnston of Sportsnet, who's on the headline segment on Hockey Night in Canada, said that the industry favorite, the feeling within the hockey world, is that the Colorado Avalanche are the front runners.
Oof.
And can you imagine a first line of MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog with Taylor Hall on that second line with whomever, whether it be Nazem Kadri or Andrei Burakovsky or Jonas Donskoy or whomever? Like, I mean, the Avalanche, this is, they're after it. The Avalanche are 12-0-2 in their past 14 games. And Taylor Hall will only put them over the top.
Cale Makar,
yeah,
is sick.
He is sick. I mean,
he should be contending for the Norris as a rookie.
You could make an argument that he might be an MVP candidate if you really want to. I mean, that argument can be made. But the Avalanche, you know, if they were to get Taylor Hall, watch out.
Force to be reckoned with.
Mm-hmm.
Adam Vingan, you're always a force to be reckoned with, and we appreciate you stopping by the studios for Preds Insiders this evening.
Thanks, Ryan. Anytime.
And once again, congratulations on your wedding coming up Saturday night.
All right. Thank you, everybody who has said that. I appreciate it.
Coming up next, it is Slapshot Radio right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Preds host the Sharks tomorrow night. Pre-game at 6, puck drop at 7. All the action heard on ESPN 102.5 The Game.